I would like to introduce our first speaker, David.
I'm an addict. My name is Dave.
Dave.
And when I got here, they gave me the name of Little Dave. And it wasn't because I was skinny, even though I was little, but it was because I was always the shortest Dave in the room. And I also think it was a way of putting my ego in check. So frequently I call myself Little Dave to get that ego in check. And what an awesome speaker that we had tonight. I just felt spiritually touched. And I want to thank the committee for inviting me here and Ed. And when Ed asked me, I thought, what? Why are you asking me that? Because I know some people that know some traditions. And then I went all through my head with, well, the spiritual principles, does that mean, is he talking about the step principles or the traditions? Or? And then I got all up in my head and they said, David, just let your higher power guide you. And I was in prayer today, and it was funny, I spent the day with my mom, and this is all relative. I spent the day with my mom, and those that know me know that not that long ago I had said if my mother was to die, I would not go to her funeral. And as a result of staying here and being spiritually fed and restored to sanity, I can spend the time with my mother and practice traditions and steps while I'm with my mother and to be able to come to a convention tonight and see somebody with just for today clean and see somebody with multiple years clean. I know that, like, my mom is home praying that I make it home tonight. Isn't that, like, awesome? Yeah. And for the right reason. Because there were many nights that she prayed I came home that I did not come home. And there were many nights that she didn't know where I was. So I want to talk about the spiritual principles, talking about the traditions and my experience, strength, and hopes as I've been blessed to walk through the traditions with my predecessors and people that were here before me that guide me. And the first tradition is that our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. And that our diversity is our strength. And what I took from this tradition was about the unity. And when I first came in, my clean date is May 20th, 1991. And when I came in, when you joined the home group, you were a member of that home group and you had a voice. The day you joined that home group, you had a voice. I'm a part of a home group now that you have to come to 3 business meetings consecutively before you become a member. I don't know what kind of shit that is. And I'm so grateful that my predecessors didn't put that qualification on it. And we'd have group consciences, and I want to be aware of my time. We would have group consciences, and we would meet, and we would talk about something as simple as, well, we think we want to make coffee, right? Well, that sounds like a good idea. And back in then, we were making coffee anyhow. But we're going to change it to make half a pot. Really? I mean, something as simple as that. And in the group conscious that I was a part of, we wouldn't change that unless we were all in agreement. Can you imagine a bunch of addicts being all in agreement? And if that meant today we talked about it and I wasn't okay with it, that's okay. Next Friday we'll come back and we'll talk about it again. And you're still not okay with that? Well, let's come back next Friday. David, be in prayer with the God of your understanding, and let's keep talking about that. You know, I'm so grateful what that tradition taught me, and what they taught me was how to communicate with people and not just say, it has to be my way and that's it. And I was a runner in my addiction. Like, if you did something that hurt me, we're done. That's it. And to be able to go back to the home group and, like, struggle through those things and come to a point of consensus and be okay with that. Tradition 2, for our group purpose, there's been one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. And this tradition, for me, is about trust. Do I really trust that the God of our authority is in action, right? And when I was reading this tradition, it was talking about letting go of my disagreements. The ability to know discernment. And that's not a word I hear a lot of in the fellowship. But to be able to discern, is this about me? Or is this about a loving God that's all about the ultimate message, helping the addict get clean and stay clean? It also said that when we give advice, we're not allowing God to be a messenger. The third step, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. And what I took from that was patience, tolerance, inclusiveness, and these you'll see in our readings. And when I thought about that tradition, there was a time in the fellowship when a person that had sexually assaulted me came to the rooms. And luckily, I'd done some step work. And when I thought about that step, anyone is invited in our fellowship. And I went up and hugged that person. Despite everything inside of me saying, tell everybody what that person did. So they'll hate him and maybe they'll beat his ass. Right? But because I had a God conscious and I knew a little bit about the fellowship, I never told the people in the room what had happened. The other experience I had with this tradition was when a guy that had broken in my house, I didn't know him at the time, broke into my house and stole my stuff. And I had like maybe 2 years clean. And this was like within the last 10 years, he showed up at a meeting. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. Now, I tell you, I got most of my stuff back. But I ain't going to say like the speaker was saying, I wasn't like, yeah, I'm all unconditional loving and everything. But again, I was able to sit still and like not share that with the people in my home group or even in my area. And I don't even know if I've shared that with anybody other than you guys tonight. Because for me, that would be character assassinating. Like I didn't do some stuff when I was using that brought pain to some other people. The fourth step, each group should be autonomous accepting matters affecting NA as a whole. In that tradition, I took away from that, about autonomy, and that when we look at some of the things that we do, I'm a part of an area that has, for the most part, about one meeting a day, right? It's pretty small, considering Baltimore, which I did from 94 to 99, and you go to how many meetings in a day, right? But when we plan events, like we just had a game night, do we stop and think about having a game night at the exact same time that a home group meets, right? Do we specifically have events knowing that there's something else going on at that time? So that the home group and the fellowship need to be one. And I know in my area there's been this thing with home groups are holding like a lot of activities, but we have a special events committee. And I know my sponsors always like, well, why are home groups doing all this stuff when the area could be doing a special event? Is that causing disunity? And I love this, like, I love this book because it says step back and what's that all about? Right? Maybe the home group is doing an event because they just want to bring some unity to their home group, or maybe the home group is doing it because they don't trust or there's some issues around principles and personalities at the area level. But it says that I have to own my part in it. So when I'm in my group conscious and they're like, we're going to have a speaker jam and it's going to be from 1 to 8. Well, now you guys know that there's one meeting that meets from 6 to 7 that a lot of newcomers come to. Why are we going to hold this event during that time? Can we stop early? Right? Something as simple as that. 5. Each group has one primary purpose to carry the message to the addict still suffers. And to me, that talks about our purpose and our vigilance, giving a clear message of Narcotics Anonymous. And when I came in, they would just stop the meeting and say, because I remember coming from treatment, and I had this new vocabulary. Hi, my name is Dave, and I'm an addict, adult survivor of incest, an adult child of an alcoholic, and my inner child is crying right now. Right? And the predecessors pulled me up at the end of the meeting in a very loving way and said, we identify as addicts here. You know, we appreciate that you're getting in touch with all that stuff, but we identify as addicts, and that's what we work on here. And that, to me, was my home group practicing the tradition. And I think they're going to be having a meeting after this one. It's like breaking tradition. Yeah. So I won't talk too much about that. 6, every new group ought to be fully self... Sorry. An NA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the NA name to a related facility. And this, to me, speaks about harmony and awareness. And when I think about this step, I was thinking about early in recovery, I came in and we had the opportunity to be given some computers. And as a newcomer, I thought that was great, right? I mean, I could barely get $5 together, let alone get a computer. And we talked a lot about how if we accepted that computer, that we'd be in violation of this tradition, right? And there was a lot of arguing. And my predecessors, they would like cuss each other out. And I remember thinking, well, what's the big deal about that? Like, why is that an issue? And that's because, you know, we were fully self-supporting the declining outside contributions. Hey, Narcotics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. And I remember there was a time when I had this really big position, and I wanted to, like, let people know what I did for a living, right? Because I, you know, I'd gone to school and I got my degree and all that, right? And they were like, we don't care. I mean, and I guess I should preface that by saying, it wasn't so much that they didn't care, it was the energy behind the ego, right? Because we want you to go get your degrees and get homes and get good jobs, but we're looking at the disease of addiction, how do we stay clean today? And when you come to meetings and you're sharing all that, and I'm trying not to say it now, but you're sharing all that stuff about your profession, that takes away from the message, a clear message in Narcotics Anonymous. Now, NA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards and committees, directory responsible to those they serve. And that one I didn't understand because we look organized sometimes, right? I mean, I go to area service and they got the agenda and we got the chair and we got the GSRs. And then I was reading about the stuff and it says we aren't organized. And what that was saying is that we carry the message anytime, anywhere. Right. I may be at the grocery store and see someone that has relapsed. I can go up to that person and talk to them. Or if they come up to me, it's okay to talk about the meetings. Can you imagine still sick and suffering addict or a potential member coming up to you and you say, oh, wait a minute, let me pull out my iPhone and schedule you a time that we can meet and sit down and talk about your disease and work in the steps, right? 10. Narcotics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, and CNA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. And when I was looking at this tradition, it really brought up for me, and it was topped into with the main speaker, it really brought up my thoughts about, like, COVID and what we experience. Should we wear masks? Should we be virtual? Should we continue having meetings even though the place that we're renting the space for said you guys shouldn't be in here because no one's supposed to be out and about? And I remember, like, it got really ugly in meeting, at least where I was from, my experience. It got really ugly. And it became a big topic about who's getting the shot and why'd you get the shot and the political. And it really took away from the message to the still sick and suffering addict. And what we ended up doing was we started meeting more regularly as a home group and having group consciousnesses more frequently. And what we found out was that we could carry the message and that maybe the person chairing the meeting would have to say something to people that were going on that rampage. And it was real significant because COVID was impacting our recovery. You know, she said tonight, isolation can take us back into the throes of addiction and not just picking up a substance. I will personally share, you know, I had Amazon coming, right? We sat at home, I had the Amazon, I was eating everything in sight, watching some stuff on the internet that I didn't need to be watching. But when we started meeting more frequently outside of the meeting as a group, there was some connection. They knew me. They could say, look, Dave, you've gained 10 pounds since we've been away from each other. What's going on? And I could share with them what I was going through. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. And I get to work as a part of public relations, and we have issues that we've gone through where we did a radio spot, right? Which you guys may think, well, that's not a big deal, right? And we had told the area that we were going to be doing this radio public relations. And when we got the area after we had did it, then we were like yelled at, cussed at, told that we had violated a tradition by going on the radio. We didn't give her names, right? But that we had violated tradition. And what we talked about was the difference between attraction and promotion. And attraction, this is a dictionary definition, is evoking interest. Promotion is expecting something in return. Mm-hmm. We didn't go out expecting people to give us something because we were sharing about Narcotics Anonymous. The other part about this tradition, Attraction Rather Than Promotion, as in PR, we do work all over the place, and we're going to be doing this event. I don't think I can name the event. But it's an event for women who have had children. And I was able to make a connection and say, hey, we would love to be at your event and share with these mothers and their families, potential members, about Narcotics Anonymous. And we got an email back from the person that's hosting it, and she said, well, we have some questions about you guys being a part of our event. It's our understanding that you have to be drug-free to come to y'all's meetings. Thank God for the traditions. So I stepped back, took a breath, talked to some people, and then I sent her the third tradition. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. You don't have to be clean to come to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And some of that was a part of public relations, that hopefully they'll invite us to come and share at their establishment about what we offer. A clear message that no addict seeking recovery needs to ever die. Ever. And 12 Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all the traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. How hard is that? Right? And this is about the equality. This is about, like, you know, I shared earlier about the person who had sexually assaulted me coming into the rooms and wanting to be clean. This is about the guy who broke into my house and took my shit wanting to be clean, right? The principles, integrity, honesty, love, patience, when all those things are enacted or evoked, it allows me to see the God in you. And I loved it said in her, in the work, in the book, that when I'm able to see a higher power in you, I'm able to step back, right? And then I do goodwill, the basis of what we build our freedom on. I think that's all that I have. I don't know if that was 20 minutes or not. I hope so. But I love you guys. I'm grateful to have this in my life. You know, the last thing I'll share is that for me, the traditions I get to work on the most at work. 40 hours a week of people doing whatever they want to do. Now, I have the steps, but the traditions help me work in relationship with each other and a lot in area of service. So grateful to be able to share, and I hope you got something out of that. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Jasmine, we've asked Jasmine to share as well. Thank you.
I'm Jasmine. I have a desire to stay clean.
Hi, Jasmine.
If you'll just take a moment with me so I can get out of the way and let my higher power come forward. And thank you, Dave, for leading beforehand. And thank you for inviting me, Ed, and the committee. And I never take it lightly when I'm invited to speak somewhere. It's an honor and a privilege. And I share that because in early recovery, my first couple times around, I was very prideful, and I actually sought out speaking engagements because I thought I had such a powerful message. Everybody needed to hear it. And that was pride, you know. And I found a season that was dry where I got no speaking engagements, and that was God humbling me. And, you know, relapse came back and started actively working the program. And when anyone asks me as much as possible if I'm able, the answer is always yes. And I get out of the way and I take it seriously, you know, because lives are at stake. And it's neat because I pray too. You know, I was thinking, like, is this the traditions? Do I do a tradition study? What do I do? Do I get this book? What do I such and such and such? And Friday night, last night, I had started kind of looking stuff up because I'm a word nerd. I love the dictionary. I was taught early in recovery, get a dictionary, look stuff up. I love it. It's taught me what things are. You know, I thought I knew what words were until I started looking them up. And then God took me a totally different route. And he knew what he was going to have you do. So it's just kind of like what you're getting, God has put this forward. And so it's really awesome, Dave, that you led with the actual stepping through the traditions, you know. And what God had me do was define what is a principle. The dictionary definition of a principle is the ultimate source or cause, a natural or original tendency, a fundamental truth or law upon which others are based, a rule of conduct, an essential element or quality. And he looked up guiding. It's to point out the way for, to conduct, to lead, to direct the course of, to direct in actions, policies, work, manage, or regulate. And so throughout my step work, I've always defined every single word, and then I rewrite it based on my understanding of what I just read. And so a guiding principle based on what I did Friday night is a fundamental truth, an essential spiritual law that directs our actions, points the way, and helps us manage and regulate ourselves and our lives. And it was neat, because I have this list of spiritual principles, and I'm just going to kind of read them. And we have books. Dave shared one of them. There's another one called the It Works How Why. Some people refer to it as the green and gold. And then there's a basic text. It's blue underneath this black thing. And that one's called Guiding Principles. If you don't know what these are, get the literature, read it, get a definition, a dictionary, and that's a suggestion based on my personal experience that has helped me understand principles that have saved my life and kept me out of prison. So here's some of the spiritual principles. Honesty, acceptance, surrender, hope, commitment, faith, courage, willingness, humility, unconditional love, perseverance, open-mindedness, God-centeredness, awareness, vigilance, self-discipline, sharing and caring, patience, forgiveness, optimism, selflessness, compassion, consideration, kindness, positive thinking, responsibility, tolerance, trust, unity, gratitude, service, self-acceptance, love, integrity, and steadfastness. This is not a complete list. There's other spiritual principles out there. But what I'm supposed to talk about is how those are affecting my life today. You know, I always kind of knew in this program, I was told the steps keep us from committing suicide, and the traditions keep us from committing homicide. And I was like, that's simple, you know. The steps are so that I can get better, and the traditions are so that I can have relationships with other people, be a socially acceptable member of society, and not have to do a lot more eighth and ninth steps, you know. And the season that I'm walking through is the hardest season of my life. Lots of reasons why, but one of them, one of my best friends has been fighting for her life for several weeks. I've been living with her and her parents and her kids. I love to live by myself. I lived in an RV by myself for 2 years. I lived in a cottage by myself for like 5 or 6 years. You know, I love being alone in my space that's safe, that I have absolute control over. It's just me and God. So if it's off, it's obviously not God. It's me, right? So I can work on that. So it's like I have absolute control. If there's a mess, I made it because nobody else is there. And I get to regulate what happens in that environment. And the environment I'm in right now, the people are religious. I can't judge their relationship with God, but there are some things that they're doing are toxic. They're not working a program, and they think they're fine. And it's really hard because we can see pain. We can see fear. We've learned in this process what it looks like by our own experience, you know. And so we've learned to identify it in other people. Not to take their inventories, but it's kind of like the discerning of spirits. If I see something, I'm like, whoa, that's uncomfortable. I don't want to be around that, you know. So that has helped me create the group of people I associate with. I, too, work with people that aren't working a program. And I had a conversation a couple months ago where I was like, shut my mouth, I'm about to get fired. You know, like, I'm just like, this is a man that I'm about to just walk out of the office, you know, and it was just like realizing that man had no idea how to communicate. He was a very passive man, very people-pleaser man, and I wanted to be like, character assassinate, judge, inventory, inventory, and I was just like, how do I handle this, you know? And so I said what I needed to say in that moment, and then I went and I prayed, and I let it go. I try not to hold resentments today. So that's the work thing. But the people I live with, I have three children that are practicing the spiritual principle of faith way more than the adults are. And that's because these kids have experienced a lot less pain than the adults have. The kids have gone through a lot of pain. But the adults are really operating out of fear, pride, and religion. And I've experienced religion. I grew up in religion. I was like, nope, no thanks, I'm out. Peace, there's no God, right? And then I went and used and everything like that, came to this program, found a God who's loving, caring, greater than me, and walks with me through stuff. And so I've learned how to have faith in the face of adversity. I've learned how to have faith in the face of fear, in the face of terror, in the face of things that I should be immobilized in, right? I've learned to walk through that. My father was murdered and I stayed clean. I've lost relationships and I've stayed clean. I've been fired from jobs and I've stayed clean. I've had whole groups of people in the rooms slander me and hate me and attack me without cause for their own reasons, and I've stayed clean and stayed in the program, right? So I've faced a whole bunch of crap in recovery, stayed clean, because of these principles. And we practice them, and I don't do them perfectly. But, you know, having conversations with people who don't work a program, who think they're fine, who are obviously toxic, those are some of the most difficult things for me to navigate. And I've had to pray for God's vision. I've asked God to show me, who did you create these people to be? Because these people that are coming at me are obviously not operating in their God-given identities, because God doesn't create this, right? Fear and pride and religion create this. And it's been a place where I can come downstairs, and I meet with God every single morning. Because sometimes before I even open my eyes, the shitty committee is right there. Pop, 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 pop. You know, when there's a 6-year-old and a 10-year-old fighting down the hallway, and I want to come out and be like, shut the fuck up, it's 7 o'clock in the fucking morning, right? I don't cuss, really. I don't. That's the thoughts I have in the morning. And I lay in bed, and I think, good things. God, help me to remember who they are. Who did you create them to be? I'm not that person today. I'm not walking out there. They need love. They need love, and they need unconditional love. Help me to be unconditional love to them, God. And sometimes I've got to get up and get in the closet before I utter a word, because the closet's my prayer room. So before I even say a word to any other living creature, I get before God, and I list everything I'm grateful for. Thank you, I'm alive. And sometimes it's like this. Thank you, I'm alive. Alive. Have a bed. You know, because it's like some mornings I'm like, get it out. Speak gratitude, spiritual principle of gratitude. And after I rattle off the things I'm grateful for, then I feel a little more peace. You know, and then I just praise God. It's easier to praise Him once I get a few of them out. And I learned that here. And I didn't always have that capacity. I couldn't do a gratitude list when I first got here. I had to call people and say, what? Give me something. Give me five. And they'd be like, bup, 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 bup. I'm like, yeah, I can't think of a sixth one. What's, give me five more. You know, like, so I had other people giving me gratitude lists because I didn't feel grateful for anything. I didn't see anything, but my glasses were covered in crap. All I saw was crap everywhere I looked. And so today I can just rattle it off. And I know it's life or death. I don't want to use today. I don't want to use. I want to run away. I want to get in the RV and leave town. I want to take my happy little butt out of this house and leave. But if I leave, and I don't say this with a spirit of arrogance, I'm a vessel to be used by God because I've submitted myself wholly to God. And I know that if I leave this situation, fear, pride, religion, terror are going to run rampant. My friend is fighting for her life right now. My role in this situation is to encourage her because she wants to live, and she's going to live. She's going to walk out of there. She's getting off the ventilator, and she's going to live her life. We already know what's happening, and she's getting stronger every day. I can only speak that because I've learned to speak faith in spite of ridiculous odds here, because we should all be dead. None of us should be in this room, period. For real, unless you're some kind of crazy miracle. But if you got your butt in these chairs, your life sucked. You know what I mean? Nobody comes in here because they really want to. We come in here because we want to live, and life hurts. And so it's like I've learned that we're miracles, and so I call forth miracles. And I've seen miracles. Last year, I was fighting against cancer. I never claimed it. I never once said, I have this. I reject that. It's not my portion. And I don't have it today. God took it out. I had a lump that was growing. It was crazy. I did the crazy holistic diet. I was like, nope, nope, nope. I reject this. Get out of my body. I reject, you know. And then it's gone. My sister was healed of stage 4 colon cancer. You know, miracles. Stuff that, I mean, I pray, I talk to God. If you don't have a relationship with God right now, it's okay. I didn't believe in God when I came in here, but I hated God. So I hated something I didn't believe in, but really I was just afraid God didn't want me. And so I came in here and it was okay to be where I was, and I was vile and I was like a filthy, nasty, hurt of mess, you know? And people said, keep coming back, you know? And it pissed me off. I was like, you keep coming back. You know, like inside I was like, you keep coming back. Especially if they said it right after I shared. Because I was like, they're saying my share was bad. You know, so it was like this whole mess in my head. But I kept coming back. And I did the work. You know, it says here, three of these, okay, there's one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. And then it goes on to say three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. So it talks about spiritual principles. And it, principles before personality, and these are spiritual principles. And it talks in our literature about our solution was spiritual in nature. And so, like, everything that I see is physical, and there's a whole nother realm. And I've gone off the deep end with this thing. Because I'm like, I'm done. I'm done with death. I'm done with toxicity. I'm done with being powerless over things that we do have authority over. I have authority over my mood. And I have authority over the household that I live in. When I say that, I mean the atmosphere. I do not have to let fear and pride and religions to take over the atmosphere. Because if this room was pitch black and I lit a single match right here, that light would dispel the darkness. There might be darkness in the corner, but with that little bit of light, it dispels the darkness, right? So darkness is the absence of light. And right now, because I am where I am with my higher power, I am able to be used as a light. And so I know darkness wants me out of that house because then it can take over. Do you know what I mean? It can take over the kids. The fear can take over. There can be panic attacks. There can be everybody having pity parties. You know how we used to do back in the day when we'd all get together and co-sign each other's bullcrap? I don't know if you guys did that, but I did that. And that's not what I'm supposed to do because I've prayed about it. God, this is really uncomfortable. I'd like to go back to my RV and just go somewhere. Can I just get the RV out of storage and go? No, be where you are. Be where you are. And then last night he said, just be. Be who I created you to be. You're a spiritual being having a human experience. And there's these principles. There's a spiritual principle for every defect of character. There's a spiritual principle to handle every situation. And if I've done the work, and we can do triage. You know, because I don't do the work perfectly. It'd be great if I every day got up and read my devotional, did my step work, and did this and met with God. I could pretend that I do that, but that'd be not honest. You know, some seasons are worse than others. Some seasons I get stuck on my phone and play games and watch reels. And then I get off my phone at 3 a.m. and I'm like, this is the same as smoking crack. I don't know how I got on my phone. How have I been on my phone for 3 hours? What? I didn't even mean to get on my phone. How did my phone get in my hand? Like, for real, that reels are my problem today. I'm like, really? Really? Adult? But it's a struggle. They're designed to get us. You know, they call it doom scrolling for a reason. But I'm aware of that. So I'm like, okay, abstinence, right? I can't pick up my phone past a certain time or else I end up on the reels. And it's like, oh, I can do the same thing with that first step. It's that surrender. It's admitting it. I tell you, it's embarrassing to say that. It's embarrassing to say I have a problem with my phone watching videos. And they're not bad videos. They're like, happy homesteader, and I'm going to be cooking and do, you know, they're like really good videos. But I'm binging for 3 hours when I could be reading my literature or praying or sleeping. You know, like, why am I tired? Well, so it's being honest with people, but it's also making sure that I don't rise up and say, like, I'm God's gift to this house. You know, let me tell you what you should be doing. You know, because I can be used as a voice to hurt other people in the name of spiritual principles, you know, because I have a great relationship with God, and let me tell you what you need to do, right? So I've been careful to check myself every day. And I ask God every morning, you know, God, prioritize my day. This is my plan. What's your plan for me? And sometimes it flows along with what I kind of had in mind. Some days he'll be like, we're fasting today, and we're going to be reading this. And I'm like, I hate fasting. But I know that when I deprive myself of food for a 24-hour period, it makes me more desperate for God. and I'm more focused when I have a hunger pain. I can actually focus more on what I'm praying for. And so for it's the season, it's killing my flesh. It's kind of saying, I'm gonna not be a slave to my stomach, because I will eat food too. I'll eat a bag of chips and this, and drink a jar of pickles and the juice and everything. And it's just like, I'm just having a heyday stuffing stuff down with food, because it's legal and it's available readily. But it's like, okay, if he wants me to fast for a day, I'll do that. I'm willing to do that because I want to go deeper spiritually. Because I'm a spiritual being having a human experience, you know. And this world's not the end all. One of my dear friends went home, you know, and her homegoing was today. And I prayed about that. I didn't feel I was led to go there. I was supposed to be here today. But there's a world after this world. And our spirit keeps living. And so, like, this program, what God has shown me is, like, all I have is my physical life here. The length of time that I'm physically here on this planet to get my spirit right. And unfortunately, a lot of us have faced abuse. I know my history was dark, very dark. So when I kind of came to this, like, self-awareness, it was like my self-awareness was just pain and miserable. And so I didn't have any knowledge of spiritual principles. Like, my mom had worked a program, but I didn't know what she I just knew the stuff that she was a brand new person in recovery, had three demon-possessed kids, you know what I mean? Like, we were like crazy kids. And I'm like, Mom, I have three kids now, and I'm like, I call her and I'm like, Mom, I understand why you screamed now. I understand, you know? And if I didn't have a relationship with God and spiritual principles, I'd be screaming at these kids too, you know? But it's like, I can hold my mouth shut today and be like, they're acting out because they're afraid. Their dad's not here. Their mom's in the hospital. They're just afraid. They don't know what to do with themselves. They're six. They don't know how to say, I'm afraid. I miss my dad. He's been gone for a long time. My mom hasn't been here. They don't know how to say that, so instead they fight each other. And if I didn't know because of my own experience, I'd be like, shut up! Why are you yelling at each other? What the fuck is wrong with you kids, right? And they don't need that at all. They just need someone to come down and be like, you're hurting right now, aren't you? And give them the safe space to talk about it and to actually teach them. I'm teaching a 6-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 13-year-old how to practice spiritual principles that I learned in Narcotics Anonymous, you know? And I'm teaching the adults too, but, and when I say this, I'm not like, I'm teaching them because I'm better. I'm like, I am freely given what has been given to me. I'm treating them like I would a sponsee, you know? Hey, here's a suggestion. This is what I learned, you know? And if they don't receive it, I can carry the message. I can't carry the non-practicing human that thinks they're where they are, you know. And so it's this place on Friday, 2 weeks ago, God showed me I resented them. And it was not a huge one, but it was a little one. And I was like, ah. I was like, thank you. And I prayed for them, and I was like, I forgive them and I release them. Because they're just speaking death. But all they see is I had crap-covered glasses when I came into recovery. So all I spoke was crap. All they see is fear. They have lost people in their lives to similar things, so all they see is that. And here I am saying, hey, God took that out of my body last year. God took that out of my sisters. They said, you're going to die in a month if you don't have surgery. Well, she went to prison. She didn't have surgery, right? She was out there, and God performed a miracle. It was actually just bitterness and unforgiveness that manifested physically in her body. And when she forgave those people, it disappeared. Stage 4, I mean, I was like, talk about a spiritual realm coming into the physical realm. Like, and this is my firsthand experience. This isn't like a third party thing. This is like my sister that I got to see, because I wouldn't believe this stuff if I hadn't gone through it. And so it's this place of having ridiculous peace. I should not have peace at this season of my life. I shouldn't have peace. I shouldn't have joy. I shouldn't wake up happy every morning. I shouldn't, because the circumstances of my life point to I should be angry, I should be fearful, I should be on some sort of anxiety medication, probably an antidepressant. You know, I should probably mope around every day, right? I should have already broken up my relationship with my boyfriend who hasn't proposed to me yet, because he's operating out of fear of commitment, right? But I put that before God too. I can practice patience and tolerance. When God says, drop your deadline, and I'm like, my deadline was 2 years ago. He said, drop your deadline. And I'm like, oh, just lead me. That I am the perfect person for this man because I can wait because I'm complete in God. I don't need a man to complete me. And if he needs a couple more years to get his spirit in a place where he's ready to commit faithfully to me, I'll wait. It's God's timing, not mine. Because I know that every time I have waited on God, it's always been awesome. Mm-hmm. Always. Even tonight, like, we were just doing the scavenger. We parade our way through this, and we got blessed with $150 between the two of us, you know? And it's like, I trust God with everything now. I never gave God my schedule. It was mine. And he showed me a couple years ago, actually. It took me a long time to let go of that. That was pride. I gave you everything else. My schedule's mine. This is mine. I dictate my schedule. Time is precious to me. This is mine. Like Gollum, my precious, you know, like my schedule. And this past couple weekends, it showed me the resentment, and then I got stuck in a snowstorm. Right? I'm coming home. I worship today. It's not religion. I actually have a relationship with a God. Religion's dead. And I love that this program is spiritual, not religious program, because religion sucks. Okay? Religion is fear, control, not a spiritual principle. Don't say religion on here. So I go and I come home and there's a snowstorm and I can't see 15 feet in front of my car. And I'm going 15 miles an hour. The speed limit's 55 and God said, keep it at 15. And there's like 2 inches of snow and I find myself on a back road. My GPS takes me two ways, always. I don't know where I was, but it wasn't on those two ways. And it was not plowed and there were hills and I was like, and I said out loud, what is this road? I have no idea where I am. Like, I'm just in the car. And God's like, this is your life right now. I have no idea where I am. I can't see but 15 feet in front of me. If I put the high beams on to try to see farther, it blinds me. Mm-hmm. Right? So I have to surrender to just seeing what's in front of me. I couldn't tell if I was going downhill or uphill. And there were some times that God would say, speed up a little bit. There's a hill coming you have to get. So I'm just literally going by this internal voice that I've learned to recognize through practicing spiritual principles and doing step work. Right? So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to trust you. I'm going to speed up a little here. And I got home safely. It took me way over an hour to get home. But he showed me that that's where I am right now. And I gave him my entire life, my schedule. I gave him my task list. You know, and the tasks that I have to do are overwhelming because this is a season of sacrifice. I'm a single woman who now is a part-time parent to three kids. I'm there for one of my best friends. You know, if God says go visit her, then my plans for the day are done because she's fighting for her life, you know. And I know that God's going to help me get that stuff done. I just know it. And I know it's okay. And I have grace. You know, my boss, I'm in a position of employment that God had led me to that my boss basically said, Don't ask me, as long as you get the work done, I'm fine. And I'm like, what kind of job is this? You know, I don't even have to check in with you. Like, he trusts me inherently that as long as I get the work done, I'm going to get it done. And I do, because I have the spiritual principle of integrity today. So the life I have, because of the program that brought me to a God who I have a relationship with, who I trust inherently, who I've learned these spiritual principles from, and I've practiced for a long time, one day at a time, right? Everything in my life is at a place where everything's upside down, but everything's perfect. Everything's perfect. And I know that it's going to be okay. I know my friend's walking out of the hospital. How? God told me. And it may sound crazy if you haven't heard from God at that level yet, but God has told me things in the past and it's happened. And so I know if God tells me, and it's not one of those kooky garbage crap stuff, you know, because God can tell, we can think it's God, like, hey, is this for me? Oh, yeah, huh, let me go ahead with this. No, it's, I know God told me that because I've prayed, I've met with him, is this my will? No, okay. So anyways, she's coming out of there, God's going to get the glory, and I've been praying for the family because I know where they are because I've been there. I've been the control freak, I've been the fearful person, and I know, and I've asked God for compassion. So he's showing me who he created them to be. So I can actually, in my prayers, instead of saying, gosh, they're speaking fear all the time. Gosh, why are they trying to control that? Instead of speaking death, what they're doing, instead of speaking death at them spiritually, I can say, thank you, God, that you created them to be men and women of faith. Thank you, God, that you created them to see miracles. Thank you, God, that you created them to speak life. Thank you, God, that you created them to be faithful in the face of adversity, you know, so I can actually speak life spiritually to these people who I don't want to be around because toxicity just sucks. I don't like to be around it. But how do we grow if we are never around people, right? How did I grow? I came here. I am sure when I came in these rooms, nobody wanted to be around me. I was not a happy person. I was toxic. And people said, keep coming back. And they actually hugged me. And they taught me. And they gave me suggestions. And I cussed them out. I was like, F you, take that crap. You're full of crap. I know you're using drugs. You know, like, it was just like this whole, eh. And that's exactly what this family's doing in a different way. You know, they never use drugs and stuff like that, so they're a little better than I was. They're not, but, you know, in their minds. But it's okay, because it didn't matter. My sponsor said, it's none of your business what people think of you. And I was like, yeah, it is. And she's like, none of your business what they think of you. You know, and it's none of my business what they think of me. So anyways, I check myself every morning. I meet with God. I practice spiritual principles. I do a devotional. I've reconnected with my sponsor because you got some time clean. It's easy to not call your sponsor every day because you're not white-knuckling it. So I'm reconnecting with my sponsor. I'm coming to conventions. I'm working steps. I'm practicing the program. And I'm getting out of my way and everybody else's. I'm only doing what God is telling me one day at a time. And so that's, for me, what guiding principles are. And I thank you for letting me share. Thank you.